was waiting for so long for a miracle to come. Everyone told me to be strong, and don't shed a tear. Through the darkness and good times, I knew I'd make it. And the world thought I had it all, but I was waiting for you.
All right, welcome to Realm of the Historics. And today we have a lot to talk about. It was the 14th of February, you know, last week. Was it 21st, yes. 21st of February, last week. And, you know, when I said, last week when I said there are three groups that think that the world owes them a special, you know, treatment. And when I said that, I meant what I said, because this is by observation. And those three groups, I said that it was women, it was people with disability, and LGBTQ community. Those three groups are the groups in the whole world that thinks that the world owes them a special, you know, a special treatment, a special honor. And I got fire from both, from all. You know, some people in the world, some people in the disability world, you know, came for me, and the people in the LGBTQ world came for me, and of course the women also came for me. But you know, that remains the truth. Whether we want to accept it or not, that remains the truth, because these are the three groups in the world that wants to be accepted. You know? And they want to be accepted, they want a special treatment from everyone else, because they feel that their own, you know, their own clubs are special clubs. But when we talk about the world as a reality, as real as it is, you know, nothing of that sort exists. That exists in a world of fantasy, where a certain group of people will think they are special over the other. So that is, well, you can continue coming for me, but you need to know that that is the reality, and that is the truth. And in fact, you yourselves know what I'm talking about. Whether you are a person with disability, or you are a woman, or you are a person, a member of the LGBTQ community, you know that you are fighting, you are advocating for your rights. Okay? So that's already proof that you think your own situation is more special than everyone else's. All right. So, having said that, we now move on to our today's conversation. And we are going to analyze what happened this week as far as the Namibian politics is concerned, because they are quite interesting, you know, stories. And also what happened we see two stories that we are going to look at, very sensitive stories, but we are going to analyze before we go to the Karata Goma that has started in the Middle East. So you need to stay glued on your radio, really. You need to stay glued on your radio, because today is today. So now when we talk about our first story, we are going to do first and second story together before we go for a musical break. And we are just going to get two items. I'm going to play for you one of my favorite jazz player, that is Abdul Ibrahim, and also Patty Machikiza and Kepi Mweketsi. Those are the two items that we are going to play. I think they might be the only music that we might play today, because I think we have a lot to talk about. The first story is the IPC leader, that is now Dr. Panduleni Itula, made a press statement press, you know, conference where he was talking about the involvement of the president's two sons, Ndili and Nandi. To be more specific, Nandi that has a company that is called the Trade Port, that operates in at Lodret. Now, according to Dr. Itula, Nandi is involved in the sales and the distribution of oil. So, which makes him party to, you know, to the oil industry. And since the beginning of the year, we've been talking about the presidency wanting to control the oil industry, wanting to put the oil industry under her control. And this has already, in fact, sparked a lot of debate in parliament. And it has already sparked a lot of interests as far as the public, as far as the court of public opinion is also concerned. We have heard a lot of, you know, sentiments. Some are pro, some are against. Then, Itula goes on to say that the two sons are part and they are in fact involved in the sale of oil, the sale and distribution of oil. And that's where the, you know, the whole press conference, you can go and watch it by yourself and you can make a lot out of it. But, this sparked a response. It sparked a response from the presidency, which demanded the written proof. That proof should come with a verifiable, you know, paper audit trail. Verifiable paper audit trail. So it should come in black and white as proof that Mr. Itula should prove his allegations on black and white. He should have written proof on his claims. And then, of course, around Thursday, we also saw the response from the two sons, the two brothers, who responded, you know, refuting these allegations that they are unfounded and they are blatant lies. And according to them, these allegations are coming from somebody who is disgruntled, a frustrated somebody, because of his failure to win election twice. So, it is coming from somebody who is disgruntled and frustrated by his failure to win elections twice. So, he failed to win elections twice. Now, he's going on rampant. He's going on rampantly to spread false, you know, information about them. And they say that they responded reluctantly. They were reluctant to respond, but they deemed it necessary for them to clear their names. And they are saying that Itula's quest is to tarnish their image and to make sure that they have a bad image in, you know, among the public. They have, and this is nothing but, you know, defamation of character. So these, in details, you can also get, and you can also check the response. Their response, it's on newspapers. You can see what to make of it. So those were, the response from, or that is the response from the two brothers. They said that they operate, they said that they only buy fuel for their own consumption, not to sale or not for sale or distribution. Okay. Now, this story, previously the presidency also clarified the fact that the children of the first family also have the right to participate in the economy lawfully, you know, under lawful procedures. They have the right to participate in the economy as long as they follow procedures. As long as what they do is procedural, they have the right to participate in the economy or to have businesses that contribute to the economic growth of the country, since they are also citizens of this country, in as much as they are also the part of the first family. That does not negate the fact that they are citizens of this country. Now, if I have to, my analysis on this issue is very much limited to the fact that I think you know, and I will use a common proverb or a common parable that says, or a common saying that says, to him that has, much will be given, and to whom that does not have, even that which he doesn't have will be taken away from them. Because this, we always say, no, people are having more while there are people who don't have anything. And my question is, do we expect the people to sit at home, sit idle at home, and depend on their mother just because they are the sons of the president? And when the sons of the president are not productive, we are also going to be the ones that are going to talk and say, sons of the president are there, they are doing that, they are not productive. Since the first family, they must lead by an example. You know, the president's sons are like, you know, pastor's children. Any mistake that the pastor's child does becomes a problem. So, I think everyone in Namibia has equal rights to participate in the mainstream economy as long as their participation is fair. You know, as long as it is fair participation, that they go through, you know, procedural processes and protocols as somebody else or like anybody else. So I think we have, if you go to other countries, you will also have, you know, presidents, you know, sons or daughter having companies, having business companies. And maybe it's just because of the survival of the fittest law, which ties to the name. You know, your name is very important. Yeah, because maybe when it comes to protocols and processes, maybe since they are under a heavy name, their own processes maybe may be faster here and there in terms of speed, as compared to if you give, for example, if they compete with Francine Nengela, who is not really known, it is going to be very difficult for Francine Nengela to get, you know, to get the tender, competing with them. For example, competing with the sons of the president, not only the president, but the son of a minister, for example, or the son of a prime minister. Now, that is not to say, okay, we might say maybe it's nepotism or favoritism, but I want to take you to a certain level of favoritism that is lawful or that is acceptable or that is part of the natural law. Because, you know, most of us only understand political law. We no longer live in reality. But there is a natural law. Whether we are the ones that have established it or not, I don't know about that. But there is a natural law that guides our morals, or that guides our morality and ethics in terms of how we do things. So there is a level of nepotism that is acceptable. There is a level of favoritism that is acceptable. For example, you know, if I'm Francine Nengela and I'm not known, nobody knows, there's no trace of the work I have done, and I'm looking for a tender versus somebody that already has, you know, a footprint. That person is already in the market, already exists in a procurement, whatever the system, the procurement board there. The person has already have supplied or rendered services with the government. So it is easy for the person processing the papers to, you know, to favor this one over me, because nobody knows my work. So it is going to be very difficult if you have no footprint, because people follow footprints. If your name has no footprint, your name has no energy enough to have an impact or to have had an impact. So that also affects credibility, because credibility is earned. All of us have the right to have a job. All of us have a right to the job. And that's fine. But there are other processes and protocols that are followed. And when those protocols are followed, you will find that other people might be favored over others because of certain protocols that are followed and certain processes that are, you know, followed. So maybe that's where an issue will occur, where you have to compete with the prime minister's child or the president's son. He might get it before you, not because he's a president is a child of the president. Maybe that might also play a role, but they also follow footprints. They also trace your activity. They also look at the name. Every name has an energy behind it. And that energy is the one that determines whether the name is big or small, whether the name is significant or insignificant, whether the name is important or not important, and whether or not the name is noble. So the energy behind the name is what determines whether you are great or not. So, and the world that we live in is like a jungle. And it is the survival of the fittest. That's why everybody wants to be associated with people with big names. And everyone wants to be associated with people that have big names. Like when, I can give you an example, when, you know, Dos Santos was a president in Angola, people wanted to be associated with the Dos Santos family because that is a big name. And if you are under Dos Santos, your process would be smooth. You know, it would be smooth compared to, you know, to João Pedro, who is not even known. So, and that is normal, under any normal circumstances, that is common. You know, because of your name. I remember one day going somewhere, and I went to collect a certain parcel, and I forgot my ID. So when I reached there, they said, "No, we cannot trust you. We cannot give you the parcel because you don't have your ID. Please go and get your ID, and we will give you a parcel because we want to verify it is you." So, but the person that was dealing with the parcel looked at me and he said, "No, I know this face. This is Franz Nangela from Eagle FM. I know this face. I also see it on social media. So, are you sure?" They asked, "Are you sure?" "Yes, I'm sure. This is the person. I know the person very well. So please, give him his parcel." So, now, that is the energy behind your name and behind your face. And we may fight here and say, okay, no, certain people are favored. And while we are struggling to even, you know, get a job, we are struggling. Yes. I want us to know how aggressive life itself in reality is. Life is very aggressive and you have to take things by force. And taking things by force, I don't mean you creating drama. But you need to work hard to establish a name for yourself. So that it is through that name that you might gain respect and a noble position in society. Otherwise, we will be crying until Jesus comes. We might not get at a certain level because of our names that don't have enough energy to create a negative, a positive impact that will provoke, you know, respect, or that will command respect from the society. So now, that also works with you. When your name is tarnished, nobody wants to be associated with you. 1405. So, that's our first story, that the world is a jungle and it is a survival of the fittest. And I don't even know the people that want to be, you know, people to sympathize with them. I don't know what they, because life itself does not have sympathy in its space. You know, if there was sympathy, a lion will not feed on a cub. I mean, on a calf. You know, on a hippo calf or a buffalo calf. Because a lion would be sympathetic with a mother. But no, a calf is food. And even the mother herself, if the lions are two, they might even go for the mother instead of a calf. So that's to show you that if you don't stand, if we don't stand on our own and fight for space in life, space will not fall from heaven for us. We will just be born and grow old and die, having fulfilled nothing, having left nothing even for our children, because we were not zealous enough. We were not resilient enough. So it takes resilience for somebody to be the president. And of course, today we are talking about the president, but it took that resilience. And even Dr. Itula himself, that is said to have failed to become, they failed twice in elections. Well, that's fine. But it also took him resilience to be, to start as an independent candidate. And today ending up having a political party that has second majority in parliament. That's hard work. It didn't come on a silver, you know, platter. It's somebody that worked hard. So, but it seems that we are told by politicians that the government will do everything. And we take that with that connotation. Well, good luck in that. But maybe the government will do something. But let it find you having done one or two things and the government just compliments. Otherwise, we'll be talking about nepotism and we'll be tarnishing other people's images. When somebody's rich, we tarnish their image and we are always, you know, suspicious as to how did this person become rich. No, he might have just gone to the Sangomas, or he might just have stolen. But there are people that worked hard to be rich. Whether or not the processes and protocols they followed are legitimate, that is for the courts to determine. But all we know at this stage, with the little information we might have, we will just say they worked hard. Now, we are going to take a music break, and after a music break, we are going to continue with our second story. And I told you that you have to be glued on radio because we have a lot to discuss. The Iran issue is coming, which is very interesting because today we received new developments.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. It's 24 minutes past the hour of 2 o'clock. And our next story, we are looking at the budget, which was just tabled, you know, on Thursday? The budget which was just tabled, you know, on Thursday. Where we have seen the Ministry of Education getting 28 billion and then the Ministry of Health getting 13 billion. Those are the two highest, those are the two ministries that got the highest budget in this year's budget. And well, last year, we're talking about the 250 million given to the young people. And this was to help them with their entrepreneurs, the young entrepreneurs who qualify. And yesteryear, the president told the old age, the senior citizens, that the government was going to give a priority to young people in that year's budget, you know, in last year's budget. And then, but prior to that, during the election campaigns, the president said that she was going to increase the pension or old age pension to 3,000. Because that's Gengob's desire to say before his desire was that before he leave the presidency, he was going to increase the old age pension to 3,000. Then the senior citizens took it serious. And it sent shockwaves around the country. And when the president said that during the campaign, I even remember Dr. Itula questioning, you know, as to where the money was, going to come from to increase old age pension. Well, everybody anticipated this year that at least something significant was going to be done as far as the increment of old age pension is concerned. But then they received a surprising, you know, shift. Or I don't know whether it is a U-turn or it is a V-10. Or maybe it's a W-10. The government made a very powerful turn, or a very powerful reverse. They did the reverse psychology on the senior citizen. And instead of a $3,000, it was a $100 increment. So that was in as much as it is an increment, some people are looking at it as a slap in the face. And people are already saying, no, the president made a promise and now she is walking back on her promise. What is that now? Can we trust her in many other promises that she made? And so on and so forth. But my analysis in the story, the moral of the story, is not straightforward. But I would want us to understand something. That you see, when you are getting money for free, when you are getting money for free, because the senior citizen, the old age pension is for free, whether it's disability grant or whatever grant that people receive is free money that they receive from government, and that this money, nobody has worked for it. So to really be angry at $100 increment, in as much as one has right to feel disappointed because a promise was made indeed. But if we flip the coin the other side, we still need to understand that this is free money that the government is giving to you. Now, this free money is this free money as it is, it is coming from somebody's pocket. It is coming out of, a taxpayer's pocket. And if it should be increased, which means you have to increase tax for you to get more money to be able to give it freely through grants. Or which means you have to increase the prices of certain things when they come through customs and excise. For example, the tobacco and alcohol that had been increased. Now, for those who are selling alcohol, beverages, and those who are importing them, they will feel the pinch. They will feel the pinch. And they will also be forced to increase the price at the retail price. They'll be forced to increase that. So that's why we need to understand that in as much as the government is committed to give a pension, it is somebody else that is paying. Okay, so the good news is that the tuition fee and tertiary education is covered by $2 billion, $2.8 billion. So nobody cares, nobody will be talking about registration anymore. All that is covered according to this budget. So that's good news. But now, even that, as a parent, you are still required to find transport and accommodation and food for your child, because the government is not going to cover that. The government is only going to cover the tertiary fees. But any other fee that the government did not cover, you cover as a parent. So I think, in as much as we have the right, I think we are also developing a certain entitlement mentality. We are starting to be more entitled. We are starting to be more entitled, and then We even demand things that are impossible. And this brings us, this ties us in into the other story of the honorable, the outgoing honorable, you know, Eliphaz Dingara, who, having served, you know, in parliament for 16 years, I think he's like me. He doesn't really understand the mathematics of the economics he's talking about. Because practically it is impossible for each Namibian to have $1 million. Very much impossible. And that has never happened even in the richest countries. Now, our population is 3 million. Or 3.5. I don't know what mathematics or what maths he has arrived to, the honorable there, with due respect, to come to determine that the government or the economy is able to support $1 million money to everyone in Namibia. So all 3.5 million people are millionaires. For example, transformed to be a millionaire, to be millionaires in, you know, overnight. In as much as that sounds fine to those people, to some of you that don't really have, you don't analyze, you are even talking about it on social media, that it is possible. It is very much impossible because our GDP is not at that level. Our GDP is not at that level. So we will need around 3 to 4 trillion, or between 3 and 10 trillion Namibian dollars, to be able to give each one of us $1 million. We might need up to 10 trillion if my mathematics, you know, serves me well here. If my mathematics knowledge, you know, serves me well. But I don't know where, to what conclusion did the Honorable Dingara arrive to decide to even table a motion in Parliament, suggesting that, or calling for $1 million to be given to everyone in Namibia? I think in 2023, he tabled that, and then he walked back on it, he kind of withdrew it, and then when he, in his outgoing speech, he raised it again. So, but $1 million is impossible for everyone to have. Unless he said maybe we needed to have Each Namibian citizen should have around about maybe 3.5 or $7,000. Now, I'm not sure whether $7,000, we can get it per month or it's once off. That will also determine whether we are able to afford that or not. But let me say it's a once of $3,000 per year. Or maybe $3,000, 3.5 per month. Where the government is able to do that. But it will also be strenuous on the budget, on the economy, because the government will need around 100 about 126 billion to do that. And that is how many? That's almost maybe 40% of our GDP. So that's impossible. That's very much impossible. So as we stand here now, maybe people from 18 to 59 can get a $200 or $300, $400, $500 per month that the government can afford. But not $1 million per month for everyone. I don't see that as logical. And I don't see that as possible. But anyway, I wish I would have the Honorable Eliphas Dingara try my best to find him, but I couldn't, because we want to understand where did he arrive, how did he arrive to this. But that is very much impossible.
shashwangu muri waleshwako.
Hello kumaza,
koro mzikana,
kunjani yako,
unonzo zeyi,
kudala ndifuna ukuthetha nawe, ndonje ndiyoyi,
kino ndonje uwe,
mazate a,
mazuma
ane, uti ilo buko,
ajidi watiko,
mazate na bote ni salata,
kara uji ndenga,
unandifuna we na wedwa,
jira iwewe,
mazate na bote ni salata,
kara ndenga,
unandifuna we na
Oh, I'm going back to my routine. Yeah. Reggae music is all that I need. We are going back to our roots. Wheel it, wheel it.
Yeah, going back.
Reggae music is all that I need. Reggae music is, yeah, same one. I say I am. I'm going back to my roots, yeah, yeah. Reggae music is all that I need. I say I am. Sound amazing. Yeah.
All right, so we conclude that we need around 10, we need approximately between 3 to 10 trillion dollars to be able to have every Namibian get $1 million. Now, that is despite whether you are working or not, you will have $1 billion. So, I mean $1 million. So, by the time Namibians will be millionaires. You know, you guys that are in Angola, in Nigeria, in Zambia, wherever you will wake up to just hear that everyone in Namibia got $1 million. That, if it was possible, or if it were to be possible, that was going to be a powerful news in Africa. And in fact, it was going to spill an uprising in many countries that, no, we want you to do to us what the Namibians have done to their people. That in Namibia, everyone is a millionaire. Now, let's imagine for a while before we move out of this story, before we move away from this story, let's just imagine. Let's just assume it is possible. And when you wake up, you hear that, okay, Namibians, each of you that have already account numbers, those who don't have account number, money will be paid into the banks, and the banks will give money to every person. Huh? What will happen? Some of you that are irresponsible will fire your bosses. You know what? Me, I will forget that that million for exists. So what will you do if you get $1 million? If you want to know whether the person is humble or not, just expose him to, just bring him near these two things. Power. A little bit of power and a little bit of some money. So that is the only thing, that is only litmus paper to determine whether the person is humble or not. So some of you that are irresponsible will fire your bosses. I'm going to, because you would want to go and buy Lexuses and other things. You go and buy Mahindra. You don't know how to maintain it. And you know what? As for me, I will continue working because my salary, even though smaller than $1 million, it is more than $1 million if we put it on a consistency scale, because that $1 million is just a once off. So as for me, I'll continue working. And by the end of the year, some of you have already finished with your money. you are already done with your money, you have already finished your money, and then you have fired your boss, you have spoken lies and spread lies about your bosses, and you fired them. You don't have anything to fall back on. So, but the economy will have, you know, money will circulate. The circulating of money in Namibia, there will be money in Namibia. You know, there will be money in Namibia. When that happens, there will be money. Because everyone will be able to afford. I don't know whether Windhoek, maybe we will name it, we will give it a different name. Because people will buy cars that day. Indongo Toyota or whatever shop that sells cars, they will be surprised because they will be invaded. Everybody will buy cars. People will buy cars those days. And not to talk about, you know, retail shop and clothes shop. Namibia will be given a new name. There will be money in Namibia. I think all the shops will put on a sale. They will go on sale because there will be money in Namibia. But those that are wise, like moi, I will not even move. Once that money goes into my account, I will say, I want to investment this money. I want to make an investment. That's what I will say. I want to make an investment. You know, just put that money in real estate. I'll put that money in real estate. And then I'm quiet. So, but that money, I don't know. I'm even failing to imagine. I'm even afraid of imagining Namibians waking up with $1 million on their account. this Namibia, you will give it a new name. You will give it a new name. That's when you will see, because no one will come to work. No one will come to work because people will be stuck in shops. And in fact, shops will be open 24 hours. Because the first thing that comes in our minds when we have money is to buy, is to spend. So money, you know, the shops will be open 24 hours and there are people who will just die, will just drop dead. Just by hearing that, you know, just by seeing that message, some people will drop dead. Just by waking up and you see $1 million on your account, you drop dead immediately. So you will drop dead immediately. No one kills you. You are just killed by the shock. $1 million in your account. We will, hey. I'm afraid of imagining $1 million. On, hey, it's like I can see, you know, it's like I can see, it will be chaos, or it will be chaotic. Even my English is gone. Because you go on the road, no taxi. No taxi at all. Nothing. Because taxi drivers are away. They got a million. They go and park their cars. Bus drivers are away. They got a million. They go and park their buses. Huh? Not to talk about the journalists. Radios, you switch on this radio. Switch on this radio, switch on this radio, it's quiet. But you switch on Eagle FM, you will hear Francis Nengela talking. It will be, guys, I'm even confused. You know, just waking up, you hear tiring. It's a message from your whatever bank. 100000 6 zeros. 6 zeros on your account. Who are you to tell me like that, you know? Even your supervisor. Listen, don't talk to me like that. And even those who never spoke English will speak English that day. Even those who never spoke Afrikaans will speak Afrikaans that day. And you know the first person that you will shun the most is your boss. Because some of you are very irresponsible enough to do that. You know, the reason why you are stuck with that job is because you do not get money yet. But if you get that money, the first person that you are going to shun first, it is your boss. But you forgot that your boss got an extra million. You just got that 1 million, and it's the only one that you have. But your boss might have gotten an extra million on top of the million that he has. So, and because you are irresponsible enough not to know that, the first person that you are going to bash is your boss. And then you bash him, and you even say, I resign with immediate effect, and then you go. Just 6 months down the line, the million is done. And you are doing what? You are looking for a job. That million will only leave some of us standing. But a lot of you will be in chaos. I'm pointing a finger to you. I know you very well. It will be chaotic. And let alone that $1 million must report on your account on Monday. Hey, Monday will never be blue. It will be gray or cream white Monday. Monday will be violet or navy blue. There's no more blue Monday. It will be, guys, Namibia is Namibia. Namibia is Namibia. And then I think we'll have a lot of citizens, people that will apply to be Namibian citizens, we'll have a lot of them. The Ministry of Home Affairs will suffer that day. The Ministry of Home Affairs will suffer that day because the line of people that are going to flock to Namibia becoming citizens thinking that they will get a million. Well, it was just once off. You are talking about sanquasization. I think Namibia will be, there will be dingarization. So that day when if everyone get a million, it will be dingarization. Namibia will be dingarized, not be sanquasized, you know, dingarized. So Namibia will be dingarized. So, but all that is Mr. Dingara's dream, but it is a dream that at this moment it can never be possible. It can never come true. So that dream, it can never come through because we don't have a GDP to that level. We don't have a GDP to that level. Even if you put together all the mines and the mining sectors that, and maybe even if you bring the oil and gas, maybe oil and gas will do when we start to have trillions of dollars, of which I doubt is up to that level, because Nigeria has oil, but they don't have $1 trillion. They only have the GDP of 600. I think they have around 400 to 500 million, I mean billion US dollars. The Nigerians are at 700 billion US dollars. That's their GDP. But maybe there are trillions of or quadrillion or zillions of dollars in Namibia in Nairas. Maybe there are zillions of Nairas. But even if we get oil, we might just come maybe to 300 billion US dollars. Which will result into, you know, maybe, you know, some trillions. Some trillions will be maybe 30 or 40 trillions. So if our economy is 30 or 40 trillion, Namibian dollar, that's our GDP, and it's confirmed that maybe we have a 40 trillion economy, and our budget will be maybe 10 trillion. Then that's when we can say, okay, of this 10 trillion, we give 3 trillion to give each Namibian. Or maybe 300 billion for each Namibian to have 10,000 Namibian dollars per month as a basic from government, whether the person is working or not. That could be possible. Ish. But having 1 million, that the government have to work very hard. Just because Mr. Dingara is also now going. He's also now retiring from parliament. You're supposed to have explained what do we do to arrive to that conclusion. Now Mr. Dingara is going. Totwa I call your name.
Daddy.
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 I call your name.
Daddy.
All right. So now we leave the story of the $1 million. We now come to our last story. And we now look at what is going on in the Middle East. The Middle East is almost getting on fire because the United States and Israel have started launching strikes in Iran. There are reports that the Iranian capital was rocked with explosions. So there were explosions in the Iranian capital, Tehran, and also the Iranian army started responding to the attack by hitting Israel and also Bahrain and Kuwait. So because the Bahrain and Kuwait, these are places where American or countries where American bases are also, countries that host American bases. So they are also being hit by the Iranian army responding to the Israeli and American attacks. And because the Geneva negotiations failed miserably. Because the Americans wanted to force the Iranians to, to come to their knees, but the Iranians refused, especially the issue of the ballistic missiles. They wanted the Iranians to stop producing ballistic missiles. And the Iranians see this as strategically important for their defense. That they are rumors that the Iranians are working on creating or manufacturing, intercontinental ballistic missiles that could have the potential to reach the U.S. mainland. But the Iranians are denying this. They say that they only limit their production to the 2,000 range, the 2,000 kilometer range, and that their ballistic missile program is defensive in nature. Also, America's demand was for the Iranians to destroy the Natanz, the Fordo, and Isfahan nuclear sites. But the Iranians refused this. Therefore, now the Americans have started, striking the Iranian city. So this is latest, when I was trying to check. The last time I saw it was, the Iranian capital city hit, and it is said that, smoke is coming from near the presidential palace and also the Supreme Council offices. So we are yet to see, because in all strikes there are no damage reported on both sides. Israel is being hit also with missiles, with ballistic missiles. And therefore, the army is ordering the citizens to be at safe places because air defense may fail. So they must always run to shelters. They must always run to the shelters. So this is what is going on in Iran right now. There is a situation. Now let's just get into the analysis of what is going on in Iran. It seems that the Americans want a regime change. There is this prince, the Iranian prince, Reza Palawi or Reza Pahlavi, the son of the Shah, the Shah that was overthrown in 1979. So this Reza Pahlavi is said to be in the United States, and he seems to be the one that, you know, wants to come back to Iran and lead Iran. Whether or not when he comes back, the Iran will be Islamic Republic or not, we don't know that. But if Ayatollah Ali Khamenei gets killed and the regime gets toppled, then that is going to be the death of Iran. But there is a problem, because this method seems to have, things seem not to work well. Because if America, like what they have done now, they have attacked and the country is hit, so the country is able to mobilize citizens to even join the army, and they will willingly join the army to fight the enemy. So, America and Israel may not get the results if they want to topple the regime. This might even strengthen the regime. It might even strengthen the regime very well. But here's the problem that Iran is facing right now. Iran has a province called Kurdistan. Kurdistan is a province of the Kurds, the Kurdish tribe. That province, people are taught the Kurdish language, and there are Kurdish schools. They are taught. So the Kurds are in Iraq, are in Syria, and they are in Turkey. And everywhere where you have the Kurds, they seem to want to be autonomous. They seem to want to be independent. So, and I see that even the other time, Turkey was facing the same problem, where there were Kurdish fighters who wanted to be autonomous. And there was an attempted coup in Turkey that was said to have been orchestrated by the Kurds. So, but I want to take you to 2003, when Iraq was invaded. The Kurds fought alongside the Americans because they were promised that they will be autonomous. And right now, they are sitting on oil reserve. That's almost 4 billion barrels of oil. So they are between 400 billion barrels of oil. That's the wealth of the Kurdistan province in Iraq. And this is controlled by the Kurds, and they are now autonomous. So it seems that this has encouraged the Kurds in Iran. They also want to do what other Kurds have done in Iraq, like their fellow Kurds have done in Iraq. And so the demonstration was proof. Some people from the Kurdish tribe were part of the demonstration. So you have three major ethnic groups in Iran that might want to be autonomous, to be independent. So Iran might be carved into pieces. That's what happens when a powerful regime falls. A country can be carved up into pieces. So you have the Kurds, you have the Arabs, and you have the Azerbaijanis, and you have the Baloch you know, tribes. I think the Baloch are also found in Pakistan. There is also what is called Balochistan. So, unless Israel and America infiltrate in these three ethnic groups and create an ethnic conflict and create an ethnic-based sectarian conflict, you know, that's when Israel and America will be able to deal with the regime. When they create an internal problem, that's the only way the Americans will be able to deal with Iran. But as it stands right now, it seems to be very difficult for the Americans and the Israelis to really penetrate and topple the regime. Unless if they make a successful decapitating strike that will annihilate the entire government. That's when, you know, they can install the puppet government that they want. And they can take over the already semi-finished, centrifuges that, you know, Iran was already busy with, you know, enriching themselves with. So, but this is still at the beginning. We are yet to see as the day progresses and as the days progresses whether or not the Americans are able to win this war, or whether or not this is a war or just maybe a mere strike, a once off. We are yet to see that. But that is what is happening right now in Iran. There are strikes and they are also striking. They are also striking back. And this will now determine whether America, if they win the war, good. Trump will be able to win the Senate and Congress. But if anything goes wrong and they drag and they incur losses, significant losses that are significant enough to be embarrassing, then Trump will lose the Senate and Trump will lose the Congress. This is what Zelensky is hoping. Zelensky hopes that Trump loses the Senate and the Congress so that the Democrats come in and they continue funding Ukraine, because Zelensky wants to fight. Zelensky wants the war because the war keeps him in power. Because if the war ends, he will be forced to conduct elections, which will culminate into his loss and, you know, him leaving the presidency. And he doesn't want that. So Zelensky right now can only pray that the war is shorter and Trump loses the Senate, and then the Democrats win the Senate, they become the majority, even in Congress, so that they will vote to continue funding Ukraine. And by the time the war ends, Ukraine will be, I think Ukraine will cease to exist. And if the Democrats comes to Senate and Congress, I think that will be the beginning of the third World War. Because the British, the French, and the Germans, the Estonians, the Lithuanians, and the Polish seem to want it very much. They want a war with Russia, as well as the French. But they are being now constrained. They are being restrained by, you know, Trump, who doesn't want war. But of course, if the Democrats come in and Trump is impeached, there might be a war.
Miss Peaches, Etta James, and something got a hold of me. Go on ahead.
Oh, sometimes I get a good feeling, yeah. And I get a feeling that I never, 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 never had before, no, no. I believe, I said I really do believe that, you know I really do believe that, and oh yeah, and oh yeah, and oh, and oh, and oh,
feel all right. Ooh, I feel all right. Oh, yeah.
If this war drags on longer than expected, this might get into Trump's approval rate. It might, the Trump's approval rate might start falling.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And that might affect his presidency. He might be impeached if the Democrats takes over the House. And people like Lizzie Graham, who is from the Republican, but is much pro-war. He even wants Ukraine to be given nuclear weapons. Because apparently Ukraine must kill a lot of Russians. That is Lizzie Graham. I don't know what he drinks or smokes, because you know, when you threaten, when you are from a nuclear power, threatening another nuclear power, that must take somebody that is smoking some expired brand of, Daha to do that. You know, that takes somebody who is smoking an expired brand of Daha. Because you are talking about nuclear weapons. That, you know, hundreds of millions of people can be cooked instantly just by one exchange. The entire world will end as we know it. Including Lizzie Graham himself. So I don't know what Lizzie Graham smokes, but I think he needs to reconsider, you know, his actions. When you are talking about, you know, countries like our countries who are not armed with nuclear weapons, you can talk all you want. You can talk like that. But for a country that has more nuclear weapons than anyone on earth, you know, for a country like Russia that have thousands of nuclear warheads, which can hit, you know, America with 1,000 nuclear, I mean 1,000 nuclear warheads, and hit Europe with 2,000, and still left with thousands to respond, you don't make such a threat. You don't make such a threat. Because such kind of threats will be, you know, suicidal. And no one wants to go that path. But with Biden, we were almost at the brink. Because they gave Ukraine the 80 ACMS missiles. And they were on their way to give Ukraine the German Taurus missiles. And now the Ukrainians wanted the Tomahawk. And the Tomahawks can carry nuclear warheads. So, if Ukraine is given the Tomahawk, then Russia will be left with no option but to use the Salmat. Or to use the Brezhnev. And I think that is going to be an escalation. So Zelensky is counting on Trump's failure. Zelensky is counting on Trump's failure and is calculating very well that's why he's dragging his feet. Because he cannot afford to get into elections. So when Israel and America have started, you know, attacking Iran, we might see war dragging on for a long time. Whether they are able to do ground, you know, invasion or not, we are yet to see as the war develops. But we see that the world might be plunged into total chaos. We are yet going to see whether China and Russia will somehow rescue Iran, or maybe Iran will be left to themselves. The problem with China and Russia is that they don't interfere with countries, with internal issues of other countries, which is good, but it is also, you know, it is also devastatingly, you know, dangerous to China and Russia's allies. Because if China and Russia are going to watch Iran being decimated, then the Chinese and the Russians have no allies. And then it is going to be silly for any country to, you know, to be allied with the Russians or with the Chinese. Because that alliance produces no security. So what China and Russia are going to do will determine whether or not it is safe to be allied with them. China and Russia are big countries. They are all nuclear power countries. They are powerful militaries. They can stand up to the US and the US can draw back. But the fact that they are quiet and they are not doing anything, it makes it more dangerous to be aligned with the Russians or with the Chinese, because their alliance will prove futile if, you know, if countries that are allied with them are attacked and they do nothing. All they do is to make, you know, statements. So, let's watch and see what is going on, but it is very, very interesting. It is very interesting what is happening. Very, 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 very much interesting. So, Russia and China, is up to them now to act and to see whether Iran was indeed, whether their friendship and alliances was really, you know, something to go by. Or it was just those political, you know, political statements that do not practically produce any fruit. We are yet to see that. So, but interestingly, they are hitting each other, and we don't know who, what damage is, you know, what damages are caused right now. It's still a new development. I think they are just starting up. They're just warming up. We are yet to see what they are going to produce, whether the beautiful armada that Trump is talking about is going to produce fruit, or it's going to produce other things. But the Spanish armada failed miserably where Trump took the word from. So, That is what is going on right now. And we are watching. We are watching. It is almost a minute. It's a minute before I say my goodbyes. Because I see, my brother Nalvanda is ready in the north, but I'll finish very soon and hand over the mic to him. We are going to listen to Omoeli from the north. So if the war drags on, that is also going to affect the US dollar and trade in the world. Oil might become expensive because of the Strait of Hormuz. The Hormuz is the one that, you know, just that is just a stretch where ships pass. And if Iran blocks it, most ships will be stranded. And that will plunge us into problem. Because insurance companies will start refusing to insure ships that go on that route. So as for me, it is a goodbye. We are going to meet again next Saturday when you are coming to analyze other things, other stories. So, I am landing. Once you hear that sound means it's a goodbye from me. And now I'm handing over to my brother and colleague, Nalvanda, who is taking you through the Oshwambo Omoeli.